Welcome to the weekend. Life as we know it has changed because of COVID-19. The list of daily closings continues to grow. Another big one happened at midnight. The U.S. and Mexico closed the border to all but essential travel. That will lead to major disruptions for millions of people who cross back and forth to work, shop, and visit relatives. At a busy international bridge in El Paso, Joel Cuevas is worried about the closing of the border to all but essential travel.
I'm a little bit afraid.
The 23-year-old is a U.S. citizen who works on the Texas side of the border at a factory that makes uniforms. But he lives in Mexico with his wife and new baby.
Yeah, I have my house over there, and like, I'm married and I depend on my work, so yeah, it's going to be tough.
Mexico's foreign minister issued a statement saying under the agreement to close the border, workers with legal permits will be allowed to go back and forth to their jobs. But it has not been clarified yet if that's only essential workers. What is clear? At least $1 billion a day in trade between the U.S. and Mexico, including cargo shipments, will continue. Travel for recreation or tourism between the neighboring nations will not be allowed as the U.S. and Mexico work to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The biggest thing we can all do as individuals to stop the spread of the coronavirus is social distancing. That means gathering in groups of fewer than 10 people. That's not easy for many of us with large families. And it's a hardship for some parents to protect older relatives because they can no longer rely on grandma as a backup babysitter, especially with the children out of school. But maybe the most difficult thing with social distancing is changing the way we greet each other. I spoke to families struggling with social distancing before the border closed down. In South El Paso, seven members of the Trejo family get ready to part ways near an international bridge. Some will stay on the El Paso side of the border. Others will head back to Juarez, Mexico, after enjoying a visit. 15-year-old Ruby Lerma Trejo tells us who's there. You have your mom, is that your?
Yeah, my mom, my grandma, and my tia, and my little cousins and my two sisters.
They've been conscientious about hand washing and using hand sanitizer. But when it comes time to say goodbye, there's hugging. 65-year-old grandmother Blanca Trejo said in the middle of an embrace, she thought, oh no, we should have done the little elbow bump. That's something the family planned but forgot to do. On the border, people greet each other not only with a handshake, but also a hug, abrazo, and some kiss on the cheek, which is customary in Mexico and other parts of Latin America.
If we're really going to reduce the risk of this epidemic from spreading in our community, we're going to have to learn how not to do that.
Ogechica Alozi, an infectious disease specialist in El Paso and chief medical officer at Delso Medical Center, acknowledges changing cultural norms is not easy.
It's something that we're going to have to work on. It's something that we're going to continually have to remind our community, our friends, our families, our children. I have two children.
Limiting gatherings to the recommended 10 or fewer people will also be hard for border residents with large extended families and ties that bind on both sides of the border.
Tenemos nuestras precauciones, pero tampoco entrar en pánico y así, ¿verdad? O sea, todo normal.
Juarez resident Lucia Cardosa said her family is taking precautions but not panicking. She was visiting El Paso with her 76-year-old father.
Lavarse las manos. Nada de beso, dicen que nada de beso.
Silvestre Cardosa said, we have to continue living life as it is. His advice, wash your hands and no kissing. Plenty of older residents did not heed the other advice from health authorities to avoid public places.
No.
Miguel Hernandez scoffed at that idea. The retired maintenance worker who lives in Juarez said he was relying on his faith to protect him. He offered a handshake, insisting he will not do an elbow bump. Hernandez says he gets that cough every winter. He did not cover the cough either. Early in the day, he lined up with other pedestrians waiting to cross the border into the U.S. Americans arriving from Europe have complained they were stuck in lines at crowded airports before going through U.S. customs. That's common during peak hours at busy border crossings every day. El Paso father Kevin Alemán was headed across the border to Juarez with his three-year-old daughter, who was munching on M&Ms, to visit the girl's mother, something they do up to three times a week.
I carry a hand sanitizer in her backpack all the time, just in case of anything.
He's not concerned about COVID-19, but others, like 87-year-old Leonardo Alvarado, are worried about what he calls a dangerous virus. He's a singer-songwriter and goes by the name Gavilán Norteño.
Te califico como Lucha Villa y Lola Beltrán.
Alvarado belted out one of his songs near the International Bridge in El Paso before heading home to Juarez. He said he's considering composing a corrido or folk song about COVID-19.
Todo mundo no creía, pues tremenda situación, la reina de la canción.
Along another stretch of border in Matamoros, Mexico, there's concern about COVID-19 in a migrant camp. More than 1,500 asylum seekers are living in the tent city as they wait for a decision from U.S. Immigration Court about their cases. Texas Public Radio's Reynaldo Leaños Jr. reports.
Along the banks of the Rio Grande, a small group of kids splash in the murky water. They wear shorts with no shirts, and they leap from a makeshift dock into the river. Not far away, their parents stand on a hill that overlooks the water. And behind them stretches a village of hundreds of tents they call home.
Lo que pasa que mi hijo ahorita...
Fernando is from Honduras and has lived in the camp for almost a year. Like others here, he'll only speak if we don't use his full name. He holds his 10-month-old girl.
¿Te quieres ir para Estados Unidos? ¿O para Honduras? ¿Te quieres ir?
He playfully asks the baby if she wants to go back home. Fernando says living here hasn't been easy. It was always a life of uncertainty. Now, there's been an unexpected twist. The coronavirus might reach the camp, and he feels they're invisible in the eyes of the Mexican government.
No, nosotros no somos prioridad aquí.
We're not a priority here. We're in their way. That's how they see us. Imagine, if we get the virus, we don't have security.
He says COVID-19 has put his family in a tough spot.
We're thinking about sending our kids to the U.S. It's hard to be separated from your children, but I feel like they'll be safer from the virus in the U.S. than here living in tents and these conditions.
Because his kids are minors, ages 16 years old, 9 years, and 10 months, U.S. policy will admit them to the country if they are unaccompanied by an adult, which means they will have to cross alone.
We're going to try this tonight to see if the kids can cross. If not, we're going to try to cross them through the river.
While some families think of a way out of the camps, others do their best to make the tents safe and healthy. Down the path from Fernando's tent is Yamali. She's from Honduras and has 3 kids. She says she doesn't want anyone to lose their life and hopes no one dies because of the virus. There are now signs posted with cartoon sketches on how to properly wash hands. Another sign reads, Inventa un nuevo saludo, which means invent a new greeting. But the bigger impact, it comes from U.S. volunteers. If they stop coming, Yamali says it could cause chaos because they depend on their help. Some of these nonprofits will limit their crossings into Matamoros due to the fear of spreading the virus to migrants or contracting it themselves. But Global Response Management, or GRM, will continue.
We as an organization are good at disasters. We try to think about the worst case scenario and plan for that and then hope for the best.
Daniel Taylor, a GRM remote paramedic, says following U.S. safety guidelines is almost impossible in a tented camp.
Things like social distancing is very difficult here, simply because the living conditions, some people are in 10-foot by 10-foot tents, and there may be 4 or 5 people in that.
A measure they have made is adding more hand washing stations. They're also pursuing coronavirus testing kits, if only they can cut through the red tape.
So our organization actually has access to rapid tests that we could have imported into Mexico. We need the Mexican government to approve that. So far, that has not happened.
That's Helen Perry. She's GRM's director and a trained Army nurse from the Ebola crisis.
We're even offering to give 500 kits to the local hospital for them to be able to test. We desperately need them.
While the testing kits are tied up by the Mexican government, one migrant has decided it's time for his family to leave the camp. Fernando has made up his mind. His 16 and 9-year-old kids will cross the border alone.
It's going to be hard. My heart is going to break into several pieces. It's very hard.
At nightfall, he and his wife hug their children tightly. Everyone is in tears. The kids walk across the international bridge to turn themselves into U.S. border agents, all in hopes of being safer there than here at the camp. I'm Reynaldo Leaños Jr. in Matamoros.
As many hunkered down at home, U.S. immigration courts remained open. After pressure from judges and attorneys, the Department of Justice postponed some hearings for migrants who are already released into the U.S. But other hearings are still moving forward for detained migrants and asylum seekers forced to wait in Mexico. And joining us now is Mallory Fall, KERA reporter, who is based in El Paso, doing some wonderful stories and really busy these last few days. Mallory, so thank you for making time. I did want to ask you to give us the latest. You've been covering immigration courts and the impact from COVID-19. What's the latest? I know this is changing day to day.
Yeah, this is constantly changing. So what's true one moment in time can be completely different a couple hours later. But there's been a consistent call from immigration judges, Immigration and Customs Enforcement prosecutors, and immigration lawyers, three groups that don't normally agree on much. And they're all calling for a total shutdown of the immigration courts. And as things stand, some courts are still open. Hearings for migrants who've been released into the United States have been postponed. But hearings are still taking place for migrants in U.S. immigration detention and asylum seekers in the Remain in Mexico program. On Friday morning, we've been hearing about some rescheduling of MPP hearings, but so far there's no official word on some sort of across-the-board cancellation.
So you and I are out running around trying to cover this border closing situation, and don't know if you've had a chance to talk to anyone about what this might mean for immigration lawyers who try to go into Mexico to meet with clients who are part of that Remain in Mexico or MPP, where they're not allowed into the U.S. until they actually have a hearing.
Yeah, this is so new that I haven't talked to anyone since the announcement. But earlier in the week, I was actually shadowing one lawyer who moved to Juarez from El Paso, is planning to kind of stay there permanently. She was preparing for this border closure and wanted to make sure that if and when the border did shut down, she could be there in Juarez working with clients there, didn't want to be stuck on the other side. And so I think that's something lawyers are navigating now of, you know, it appears that people can still travel for work, for some work purposes. And so will they fall into that category and can they continue to work with clients? But people also some people have been hesitant to cross out of fear of bringing COVID-19 from the U.S. into Mexico. We have more cases reported in El Paso and people don't want to be spreading it in migrant shelters in Juarez.
Yeah, a good point. And of course, that's been the dominant story. Running around, you know, right there at the border. I mean, people are still going back and forth. They have to for their daily lives. And there is concern now with the shutdown. We won't, you know, it's to essential travel. We're Mexico's foreign minister saying that means people with legal permits can go back and forth. But, of course, essential has not been clearly defined yet. Let me ask you, I mean, covering the COVID-19 virus, how are you handling that out in the field as you report? Because I've also had to think about that and try and be as careful as possible. We have to do the stories, but we also have to keep some distance.
Yeah, it's been a mix. Some people have actually said they're not comfortable meeting for in-person interviews. So I've been conducting a lot of interviews over the phone and then trying to figure out how to put a good radio story together when all the interview tape is phone tape. For people who are willing to meet in person, trying to kind of keep the microphone as far away from faces as possible while still capturing the sound and trying to do interviews in open spaces as much as possible. But everyone is kind of having to reorient how they go about doing things.
Yeah, no, you're right. Even thinking about, do we use the windscreen? It's very windy this time of year in El Paso, but of course that's like a little sponge. So you, I know I've been wondering how to handle that. Well, Mallory, you've done such great work, and we I've been trying to have you on to talk about just having you here in El Paso and the coverage you're doing. And now that we're doing local news, it's just great to have you. It's been a whirlwind since you got here. I mean, you can just tick off the stories you've worked on, and it's been nonstop. But a lot of the migration issues, in particular, and border issues.
Yeah, you know, some of the first stories I was reporting on here were stories about family separation, and it feels like it's been really nonstop since then. And at the time, it felt like what more could come after this? And we've seen that a lot more could come.
So going forward, I know you have to run out and finish your reporting. You're out there right now at the border. What are you thinking? I mean, these are really day-to-day, moment-to-moment times. What will you be keeping an eye on?
I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on whether immigration court remains open, whether Remain in Mexico cases move forward, and if they don't, whether that's because the federal government has made the call to postpone them or whether it's because judges are calling in sick or taking leave. And I'm also going to be watching to see what happens with immigration detention facilities. There have been a lot of calls to release people being held in those facilities, which we know there's potential for outbreak there. Many people there are being held civilly, and so there's calls to release people whose health could be at risk in detention. And so I'll also be seeing whether there are any developments on that front.
Yeah, and of course there are real concerns about the migrant shelters in Juarez and the migrant camps elsewhere along the border where people are crowded together. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. But Mallory, thank you so much for making time. Again, that's Mallory Falk. She's a KERA reporter based here in El Paso. We're lucky to have her, and we'll have you back on a future program to talk a little bit more about your work. Thank you, Mallory.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
With the number of coronavirus cases growing across the U.S., that's putting an extra burden on people living on the financial edge. KRA's Christopher Connolly looks at how the public health system is responding.
Some of the guidance for keeping yourself and others safe and slowing the spread of the novel coronavirus is easy for most people. Wash your hands thoroughly and often. Cough into your elbow. Avoid touching your face. Other advice is trickier, like telling people who may have been exposed to stay home from work or to go to the doctor if they have symptoms.
That seems like a very fair thing to ask people when we're in the middle of an epidemic.
Erin Carlson directs the Graduate Public Health Program at the University of Texas, Arlington.
But if you do not have health insurance, if you do not have sick leave, that's a very difficult thing to actually do.
5 million Texans don't have health insurance, so they may not have a primary care doctor to call. Even more Texans are underinsured, which leaves people wondering if they can afford to go get tested. And about 40% of Texas workers don't have paid sick leave. Many of them, like home health aides and restaurant workers, have jobs that put them at particular risk for contracting or spreading viruses.
If your child is sick, how are you going to stay home and take care of that child if, again, you don't have sick leave? So a more likely scenario is you send the child to school sick because you cannot afford to lose those wages. Or if you feel sick, you're going to continue to work because you can't afford losing those wages.
Research shows that people generally want to follow public health guidance and keep their communities safe. But for many people, it's a devil's bargain. The U.S. stands apart from other wealthy industrialized nations because it doesn't require sick leave or guarantee health care. And Carlson says that presents a challenge to the public health systems that respond to pandemics like coronavirus.
Even though we have fantastic public health preparedness in the United States, and in North Texas hospitals, we are remarkably well prepared for this disease. I have no fear about that. That's not what makes us vulnerable. It's that people won't use those resources because they perceive that they cannot afford them. So that's how we are more vulnerable in containing this outbreak than other developed nations.
State and federal governments are trying to respond. Some businesses are rolling out new sick leave policies, and public hospitals and clinics will treat people who are ill regardless of their ability to pay. But there are more challenges. How does someone who's homeless self-quarantine? And when schools and daycares close, parents may be forced to stay home and lose income. Public health professor Diana Cervantes from the University of North Texas Health Science Center says it also means kids who rely on school meals could go hungry.
They eat breakfast at school, they eat lunch at school, and there's a lot of school districts that have pantries for kids that they can take home some non-perishable foods to make it through the weekend.
Cervantes used to work for Tarrant County Public Health and the Texas Department of State Health Services.
And that was a big lesson learned during the 2009 flu pandemic. It's like, okay, well, how are we still going to distribute food to these kiddos? And how are we going to do it in a way that isn't going to say, hey, let's mass gather people to give out food?
Previous disease outbreaks have made public health officials better at navigating these challenges. Cervantes says public health departments tap nonprofits to make sure people's basic needs are met. They reach out to employers to make sure jobs are secure when a worker needs to be quarantined. When Ebola came to Dallas, epidemiologists delivered formula and diapers to people in isolation.
I think when you work as an epidemiologist and you're working with disease prevention control, it becomes part of your day-to-day life, dealing with people who don't have the resources, and how are you going to be able to do that?
Cervantes says one good thing she's seeing in this coronavirus response, there's been more discussion earlier on about how to help people who are vulnerable to more than just the disease. I'm Christopher Connolly in Fort Worth.
Las Cruces got its first drive-through testing site for COVID-19 on Friday, and there were long lines. El Paso does not have a drive-through testing site yet for the general public, but several Texas cities do, and there were free screenings offered in the parking lot of a hospital in Houston. Their chief medical officer is Dr. Joseph Barron.
What we're doing today and the next few days is to test people regardless of insurance status, whether they have insurance, they don't have insurance, testing people that have symptoms suggestive of COVID-19.
The Texas Education Agency launched an online map of facilities providing food for students while schools are closed statewide.
Every family in Texas can find out where the closest meal site is for their kids. That is texasschools.gov.
That's Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath speaking at a town hall meeting this week. He says 1,000 locations are already up and running. The Catholic Diocese of El Paso has canceled all masses, baptisms, confirmations, funerals, and weddings to comply with the social distancing guidelines. Across the country, weddings are also being postponed because of COVID-19 concerns. Texas Public Radio's Paul Flav tells us how couples are coping.
Tu Nguyen and Alan Gross stopped at the county courthouse in San Antonio Monday to pick up their marriage license. I caught up with them right after, and given the current pandemic, stood as far away as my microphone would allow. They did get the license, but the moment wasn't a festive one.
I admittedly almost cried when we got our marriage license because I don't know whether or not it's going to happen.
Tu's mother lives in Houston, where they're to marry in 2 weeks in a Catholic ceremony. At each mass, her mother's monitoring how the church will handle the situation.
I talked to my mom last night, and she texted me this morning.
Most of their family would need to fly in, and many are elderly. And Alan says they've already had 20 cancellations.
To be safe, we know we have a lot of people traveling that have to get on a plane, and our elderly relatives too, so it's really about safety.
They had been planning for a year, but in the end, the decision was made for them. A few hours after the interview, the county barred gatherings larger than 10 people.
How are y'all?
I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Jessica Elizarez and TJ Skrotsky video conference with their wedding planner, Jordan Maney, about next steps after they postponed their wedding.
Do you still want to keep that within 2020?
I mean, it's hard because we don't know how long this is going to last.
Exactly.
So yeah, we can say May, and if by April it doesn't look any better, we're still in the same boat.
The couple may still lose deposits because of the reschedule, but Maney says vendors are being flexible. There's insurance, venue, florists, caterers, and many other details to iron out.
It feels like somebody pulled a rug. When we got the CDC, like, the tweet that said the CDC was limiting, it was just like, we can't do this.
And to keep it in 2020, they may need to book on an off day like Thursday or Friday. They aren't crazy about this, but in the end, they just want to be married.
Bye.
That is a lot.
Yeah. I'm glad we have a planner, though.
Can you imagine trying to call all the vendors by yourself?
Oh my god, yeah.
In tears? No.
Cellist Christina Trangone is warming up for practice. She's one of many who depend in part on weddings for her livelihood. She books musicians and performs at around 200 weddings a year. If this persists, it'll hurt.
Well, that can definitely be several hundreds of dollars lost. It's definitely troublesome because, you know, that's money that we use for paying bills, of course.
Americans spent $54 billion on more than 2 million weddings last year. But for many couples, it's about way more than just the money. I'm Paul Flav in San Antonio.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of The Weekend. And special thanks to producer Sam Cassiano, also your morning newscaster, for all of his hard work. He's here every day, and I appreciate you, Sam, now more than ever. Take care of yourselves, each other, and stay healthy by staying home and away from other people. I'm Angela Kocherga, and you've been listening to The Weekend.